Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to film sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Film lovers, welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. Now, before we get to my guest in studio, I do have a recording done by film sociology correspondent McKenna Mays. She spoke earlier this week with Ben Tebbe, who is the director of theater for Marion University, and they have a show going on this weekend that you shouldn't miss. It is called The Government Inspector, at Marion University, and here's McKenna talking to Ben about The Government Inspector at Marion University and some other items. Enjoy.
Can you tell me a little bit about Marion University's theater department?
Yeah, so our program, we are a minor-only program, so we don't currently have a major, although that's something I'm working on. Hopefully in a couple of years we'll be back up and running with a major. But we are growing tremendously in the last several years. In terms of our enrollment, the university as a whole is growing tremendously right now. We added a College of Osteopathic Medicine, a medical school 4 years ago, new programs. We've got new buildings going up all the time. So, but our program has grown a lot over the last 4 years. We have about 75 students on campus involved in our program currently. We do two main stage shows a year, usually a musical in the fall and a play in the spring. And this spring we're doing The Government Inspector, originally by Nikolai Gogol, and this is an adaptation by Jeffrey Hatcher. So okay. It's a lot of fun.
And can you tell me a little bit about what The Government Inspector is about?
Yeah. So, like I said, it was originally written by Nikolai Gogol in 1836, and it's hard to believe that a Russian play written in 1836 still has something to say today, but it does. Basically, it takes place in a small provincial Russian town, and a group of town officials learn that a government inspector is on his way to inspect the town. And a case of mistaken identity leads to panic and greed and all kinds of fun shenanigans. So it's a farce. It's an old Russian farce. So lots of entrances, exits, door slamming. We've got some fun, Buster Keaton, Marx Brothers-esque moments going on stage in a sort of a madcap set to play on. So it's a lot of fun.
And what kind of preparation has gone into this play?
Well, we selected the play about a year ago, and it kind of the show we did in the fall was Fiddler on the Roof. So we kind of have a Russian theme going on, and I don't know, last spring around this time, I was thinking to myself, you know, we don't hear anything about Russia in the news these days. I wonder what's happening over there. So we thought we would do Fiddler on the Roof and say something about the immigrant or the refugee crisis happening around the world right now. And then we chose this play. You know, it's a play all about government corruption and incompetence. And we thought, and it's just a fun farce. And we hadn't done a comedy, a true comedy, in a long time, and thought it would be a fun chance to give our students that opportunity.
How long have you been involved with Marion?
So I'm actually an alum. I graduated 19 years ago, I think. I have to do quick math in my head. And I came back to Marion 6 years ago after, you know, a 15-year career as a professional actor to lead up the theater program.
Okay.
So, yeah, I've been there about 6 years.
And because you are an actor, do you remember your first show?
My very first show ever? I do. It was Hello, Dolly. I was 6 years old. I think 5 or 6, and I basically ran on stage and waved to the train as it exited the stage. If you know Hello Dolly, you know the big train scene where they're singing put on your Sunday clothes, I think, or something like that. So yeah, that was my stage debut.
Mm-hmm. And what made you want to get into theater?
I don't know for sure. It's something that I've always been drawn to from a very young age. I was very lucky to have parents and grandparents and uncle who took me to see plays, touring Broadway shows, ballet, opera, from a very young age. I remember when I was 4 years old, I got to see Yul Brynner as the King in The King and I in a tour in Cincinnati. And so I was just very fortunate from a young age to have that. And in my hometown, we had a community theater group, and my dad was involved and got involved when I was about 5, and so then the next year I begged him to take me along to the auditions, and that was Hello, Dolly. And so I've just been drawn to it. There's more so than any other art form, I just feel a connection to the stories that are being told on stage in a way, and I just can't get enough of it.
And how have you been able to take all of this experience and bring it back to Marion?
My hope is to you know, we were talking before we went on the air here, and you know, I'm still in process myself in terms of what I'm trying to figure out in life. So I've been very fortunate to have lots of great experiences in my time, you know, working professionally, you know, working with community theaters from a young age. So I try to take that experience and instill that type of work ethic that I've experienced and come to understand what it takes, the work ethic it takes to be involved in theater onto my students. That's one of the most important things that, and you know what, most of my students aren't going to make a living acting or being part of theater, but the experiences they gain from being part of our program are hopefully impactful on their lives, learning that work ethic, learning the teamwork and the collaboration that it takes to be involved in a successful production is what I hope to be passing on to them.
Good. And why is the theater and art so important for students to have an interaction with?
Theater to me gets to tell stories in a unique way. And stories are what I think make us human. You know, it's what we do as humans. We tell ourselves stories to make sense of the world around us. And you know, there are lots of different ways to tell stories. I mean, it could be in a book, but that's one author and one reader at a time. And there are, of course, movies. We're on film sociology, so we're talking about films, and that's, you know, that is sharing it with the masses. But it's there's still a and we can feel deep connections to films for sure, but there's still a disconnection there between the audience and the actors. And what theater does is it sort of brings all of that together, all of those stories together, and it's actors and technicians and an audience all in one room together, sharing that experience or outside, wherever the stage, wherever the play is taking place. It's, we're all there in one place sharing those moments and sharing that story. And I think that's what's so essential about theater.
That's a really good answer. So are you currently, do you have any acting projects going on right now?
Not currently, but my job at Marion keeps me pretty busy. I am a founding member of Indianapolis Shakespeare Company, and I like to promote them whenever possible. And we do free professional Shakespeare in White River State Park every summer, and have been for the past 10 years. And this summer we'll be doing a production of Coriolanus, which is a not very often done production by Shakespeare. I don't know yet if I'll be in that show. I will be performing as part of a little performance. Where the In-N-Out Shakespeare Company is doing a fundraiser in April, sort of a Shakespeare's birthday bash as a fundraiser for our organization, and we'll be doing a little production as part of that. So,
and kind of bringing it back to the government inspector, when can people see it? Where can they see it?
Yeah, so it's this weekend. It's the 23rd, 24th, and 25th of February. Friday and Saturday night at 7:30, Sunday at 2:30 at the Marion University Theater on our campus, just on the near northwest side of town. And, yeah, it should be lots of fun.
That was film sociology correspondent McKenna Mays talking with Ben Tebbe of the Marion University Theater Department. The Government Inspector is running this weekend, so go check that out. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I have two wonderful ladies in studio. They have been on the show before, but never together, and now it's happening.
So look out, world.
So that's one voice, that's Erica Barker, and the other voice is Taffeta V.
This is the sound of my voice.
Now, I am talking now.
This is how special this is. If you're a longtime film sociology listener, you know that there are certain guests that also have their own guest intro. Ladies, to celebrate, you each have your own guest intro now. So, now, that, for those, of course, if you remember such intros like the Hartz family, basically, Monica and Brian and BB. Hers is not an intro. It's more of a duet. Of course, Abdul-Hakim Shabazz's and most famously Richard Probst, among others. So anyway, I think this will explain itself more than anything. Erica, here is your introduction.
Beastmaster.
Ringo.
Axel.
Sinead.
Chief.
McLeod.
Good night, Mother.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night, Hardcastle.
Good night, McCormick.
Good night, Chief.
Good night, McLeod.
Uncle Bill.
Jody.
Buffy.
Mr. French.
Mrs. Beasley.
Chief.
McLeod.
Dad.
Mummy.
Mr.
Drysdale.
Mr. Eddie's father.
Mr. Douglas.
Mr. Haney.
Lisa.
Chief.
McLeod.
Cujo.
Evil One. Supreme Being.
Alf.
Chief.
McLeod.
Nosy.
Chirpy.
Rat Boy. Sandra Locke.
Chief.
McLeod.
Who? Who Radley?
Dark One.
Trumpy,
Beelzebub.
Where are you?
Chief.
McLeod.
That was perfect.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing.
That encapsulates me.
By the way, for the record, somebody put that out on YouTube. I did not actually create that myself, so there's that. Take it for what it's worth.
Excellent.
I was able to name drop moment. I was able to tell Mary Jo Feel about in my household. I'm sure there are others that if more than two names are said, more than likely if it's not my daughter, it's me going Chief McLeod. It's kind of like honking after you hear two hard boiled eggs. It's just
right.
Instinct.
Yeah.
So, all right, that was the setup for this. This one's a little longer. It's not the longest intro.
You better.
No, I've known her longer.
That's
is
true.
The thing. And
I'm
and
very
she'll,
old.
She'll know why in a minute.
Money, Penny.
Oh, there.
What gives?
Me, given an ounce of encouragement. You never take me to dinner looking like this, James. You never take me to dinner, period.
I would, you know. Only Anne would have me court-martialed for illegal use of government property.
Flattery will get you nowhere, but don't stop trying.
I've never been to Istanbul.
You've never been to Istanbul?
No.
Where the moonlight on the Bosphorus is irresistible.
Maybe I should get you to take me there someday.
I've tried everything else.
Darling Moneypenny, you know I never even look at another woman.
Oh, really, James? Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you the secret of the world. Now, what do you know about gold, Moneypenny?
Oh, the only gold I know about is the kind you wear. You know, on the third finger of your left hand.
Mm. Well, one of these days, we really must look into that.
Well, what about tonight? You come around for dinner, and I'll cook you a beautiful angel cake.
Well, nothing would give me greater pleasure, but unfortunately, I do have a business appointment.
That's the flimsiest excuse you've ever given me. Ah, well, some girls have all the luck. Who is she, James?
She is me, Miss Moneypenny.
And kindly omit the customary byplay with 007. He's dining with me, and
I don't want him to be late.
So there's hope for me yet.
Moneypenny, won't you ever believe me?
In you go, sir.
Thank you, ma'am.
Oh, by the way, how was the girl?
Which girl?
The Chinese one we fixed her up with.
Oh, another 5 minutes that I found out.
She'll never know what she missed.
Miss Moneypenny, give 007 the password we've agreed with Japanese SIS.
Yes, sir. We tried to think of something that you wouldn't forget.
Yes.
I love you. Repeat it, please, to make sure you get it.
Don't worry. I get it.
Your passport is quite in order.
Well, anyone seeing you in that outfit, Moneypenny, would most certainly be discouraged from leaving the country. What can I bring you back from Holland?
A diamond? In a ring?
Would you settle for a tulip?
Yes.
Oh, James.
There
you
go.
Hers is classy, mine is goofy. That's perfect.
Oh,
yes.
He's called me Moneypenny for 20 plus years.
Yeah, that's
so.
That's every Connery. I mean, nice. The late, great Lois Maxwell. I could probably do like an hour of Moneypenny stuff if we did the entire franchise, but we just kept it to her and Sean. So
I love Lois Maxwell so much.
As do I. She was a national treasure. So
that's right.
One of the funniest moments, one of the best moments I've ever had as a film goer and as a dad was taking my family to see Skyfall. Mm-hmm. I got to see it ahead of time, so you know, thoroughly enjoyed it. And then watching I think she was 12. Watching the 12-year-old watch Skyfall. So the big action scenes and, you know, Javier Bardem and his teeth and finding out that Judy Dench's name the same as her. And then the second, Naomi Harris stands behind the desk. And she just lit up. Just so excited.
That's good parenting,
so,
sir.
Thank you.
That's what that is.
Doing what we can. So anyway, now that we've done 10 minutes of introduction. It's a good thing Brian and Monica aren't here yet. So I'm sorry, you were going to tell?
No, I just feel so lucky. It's
okay,
great.
Cool. All right, opening in theaters this week. Well, I just got back from seeing Annihilation before the recording of this. This is the new film from Alex Garland, who's best known for Ex Machina. Ex Machina, as I revisited it this week, is kind of a new version of the mad scientist story, if you think about it. And all artificial intelligence probably should look like Alicia Vikander. But in this one, it's Natalie Portman, Jennifer Jason Leigh. On paper, it kind of looks like a female Predator, at least in the first half. We have a group of female soldiers going into a thing called the Shimmer. And it's an alternate universe, kind of, sort of, with a lot of great colors. It looks great. As the film goes along, there's some fight sequences, there's some battles. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what it is. I have an idea what I think it's an allegory for, but I think it's not entirely what I think it's for. One critic for the AV Club said it's a 50s monster movie shot like Solaris.
Oh.
Which, yeah, that I was like, that kind of
makes me want to go see it.
Well, and speaking of Mystery Science Theater, you know, the films where you have an exploration group, that's kind of what this is. So with less walking, actually, probably the Mystery Science Theater film, a lot more walking because they had to pad it. So, but I also thought watching this, this could be this year's Mother, where it's not going to, it's
love
not,
or hate it.
Yeah, it's going to be a love or hate it. It's bold. It looks great. It's for grownups. As I said, I'm still mulling over exactly what it's trying to tell me, but I didn't mind the trip at all. And there's a lot of, because of it's Alex Garland who directed it and of course adapted it from a novel. there's a lot of tension. There's a sequence early on, and you see it in the trailer where a person is yanked out of a doorway, and from then on, there's a lot of it's a slower pace, lingering sense of dread, and that thing where you're waiting for anything to pop up at any time because of that moment, and so maybe I didn't get everything, but it made me tense, and that's what the film is supposed to do. So anyway, it is out there. Take your chances, folks. I don't think it's as polarizing as Mother. I don't think it's going to make people as angry as Mother. And it's not like – well, Natalie Portman takes chances as well. But it's – you know, the thing about Mother, what I always remember saying is people were going expecting a Jennifer Lawrence film. What they got was a Darren Aronofsky film.
Right.
And that's kind of like this. But I don't see people go, I'm going to see a Natalie Portman picture when it is actually an Alex Garland film. So anyway, that is out there. Any interest, ladies? Matinee, rental.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Fine. Like, I'd wait for it.
Okay. Also in theaters this weekend, and I hope I'm saying it, pardon my French, what could be the final film from French director Michael Haneke, who's given us such squirm-inducing stuff as Funny Games, both versions, The White Ribbon, Cachet, Amour, Time of the Wolf, Piano Teacher. And it's called Happy End, and it's Isabelle Huppert is in this, as well as Toby Jones, and the gentleman who was the husband in Amour, although we're not sure if this is a crossover, and it's still his character now, mm-hmm. older and wheelchair-ridden. What Michael is known for is kind of – especially a film like Amour and Funny Games, they're real kicks to the chest, mm-hmm. and this is kind of a poke with the finger. Again with the finger. So it's kind of like – so, and I don't know if he wanted to do something softer by comparison, but it's a high, well-to-do family, not very pleasant. I think one of my fellow IFJA guys said makes the people from – the family from August Osage County tolerable. It's not quite that obnoxious, but everybody has their own quips and quirks, and then it leads up to a moment near the end that I expected a home run, and it kind of got a bloop single. So I don't know if this is going to be his final film. I kind of wish Amour would be in his final film because it's a stronger picture all in all itself. Okay, also in theaters, a front runner for one of the bad title. Well, actually, it came out in 2017, and we're now just getting it. Really bad title, and it's called Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool.
Oh, yeah.
This is.
I'm interested in this one because I love Gloria Graham.
Yes, it is. Annette Bening as Gloria Graham, and she is the late 70s. She's overcome cancer, and things are starting to look her way when she has a relationship with a young 20-something actor played by Jamie Bell. Vanessa Redgrave has a scene. Jamie Bell's mother is played by Julie Walters. Yes, Billy Elliot reunion. So enjoy that. This is a film, gang, that, I think it became a victim of the Me Too movement. Because if you know the big tabloid crisis or scandal involving Gloria Graham, and it is addressed in one scene. For those who don't know, Gloria Graham was married 4 times. Her second husband was Nicholas Ray, the film director, and I just recently revisited In a Lonely Place, which is a great, great film to watch. Mm-hmm. But her fourth husband was her second husband's son.
And their affairs started when she was still married.
And he was 13.
Yeah.
Did she sort of answer the door rather scandalously, or is that just...
Well, we don't know. Well, there's no TMZ of that. But
I'm going to choose to believe it.
Me too. Okay.
What is known is that the affair started in, you know, the house while she was still married to Nick Ray, and that he, you know.
Yeah.
Anthony, I think, was the son's name, and he was still a kid.
Yeah. So
like
a kid. And for the most part, Graham kind of got, I shouldn't say got away with it, but I mean, it didn't, the tabloids didn't jump on it.
Well, it was different than the studio system kept things
for
the tabloids.
Boy,
was an entire system. You know,
Judy Garland's Breakfast.
Well, exactly. I think it helped that for the most part she played the bad girl in movies. If she had been the girl next door type, I think it would have had a lot more.
An ingenue would not have
destruction.
Yeah.
You're right.
That's very good. Everyone's favorite Violet Bick. So,
and others as well.
Others as well. This film has there was actually a fun moment where anytime I can get Mrs. Soucy to look up from her laptop, and she kind of looked up and she's like. is that Annette Bening?
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like her because she's lightened her voice a little bit. The film has a similar feel to My Week with Marilyn, which was Eddie Redmayne and his character having a week-long tryst with Marilyn Monroe, played by Michelle Williams. So it's similar. That's actually a warped double feature right there. But but Bell and Bening work really, really well together. And I wondered, you know, some would say that Bening probably should have got a nomination. And, you know, the first question is, who do you replace out of the five? But I think also, bad timing for the film, unfortunately, when that is brought up. So anyway, that is out there as well.
What did you think of it overall?
I liked it. I did. It even though it reminded me of My Week with Marilyn, but I really liked the acting.
Okay.
And sometimes good acting overcomes a kind of generic script, not generic, but something I've actually that's a very specific type of story that's been told, and I saw one a couple years ago. So.
Gotcha.
Okay. Over at IU Cinema, and if you're listening to this on Saturday, you could still haul tail down at 3 o'clock to see at IU Cinema Robert Altman's Nashville.
Ooh.
It's about America. It's not just about Nashville. Just saying. It's an allegory. And then at 7 o'clock is part of the International Art House series Zama from 2017. Taffeta, you winced at Nashville?
Oh, I had a bad experience in a film class a very long time ago where they screened Nashville, and everybody loved it.
But
and
you.
I was praying at the altar of Altman, and I did not like it. And I was ripped to shreds. So I have some feelings about that. Yeah, I still don't really like the movie that much.
I would say, when was the last time you revisited it? Not saying you have to do it at 3 o'clock at IU, but...
No, but, I'm willing to revisit things because, oh my gosh, things change over time and my perspective on it changes. It's been a long time.
Okay.
I might look at it again, but honestly, too meandering, too... Yeah, I just didn't enjoy
it.
All the things other people like.
College students can be jerks.
Yeah, I
remember my first week of film genre. We would discuss a genre on Monday, watch an example on Wednesday, and then discuss it on Friday. And the first week, we watched Patton. And half the class thought he was a patriot, and the other half thought he was a sadist. And didn't quite get – that's probably not as verbally ugly, but, yeah, it was tense when discussing that picture. So. Okay, Sunday, February 25th at IU Cinema at 6:30 p.m., the Music and Shorts Program, Double Exposure 2018. Monday, February 26th, this is something the three of us should go to. At 3 o'clock, Monday Matinee Classics from 1958, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I'm down with it.
Absolutely.
Leaded and unleaded juleps for everyone. Let's just,
That sister.
That's a lot of no-neck monsters.
Oh, yeah.
That,
I love that one.
So, Emma, I know, at times you're a walking Tennessee Williams play, in a good way.
Thank you.
Is there really a good way to say that?
You know what, I'm totally taking it as a good way.
The moments. So, well, last fall, Emma finally got to experience the Glass Menagerie. Which is probably where you should start with Williams, especially with young students.
Too late.
But I learned if you say "rise and shine" to wake her up, it's not good. She says things you can't air. So,
I
guess
seven dirty words.
And then three more. But so I guess where would you start with "Cat on a Hot Tin Roof" next or "Streetcar"?
I say "Cat on a Hot Tin Roof."
Less rapey.
It's a little
less rapey.
A little less rapey.
Too closety.
It's not quite as uncomfortable. And frankly, Streetcar is uncomfortable for more reasons
there's a little slappy.
I think just the fact alone that, and I did not realize this, I'd seen the movie, but a very long time ago, but I hadn't realized until I'd actually read the script that Blanche, who, throughout the play, she's old, she's used up, she has to only be in dim light because otherwise people will see her caved in, horrible visage. Mm-hmm. She's 30 years old.
Yeah.
It's rough.
There's
thanks, Tennessee.
Yeah.
It's kind of like if somebody just bought one of Adolph's paintings, if somebody would just get that kid a bike when he was a child. Ooh. So anyway, that's 3 o'clock of the Monday matinee. Skip classes and Go see that.
That's at IU?
That's at IU. They have some fun. I mean, I need to get John Vickers back on the show, but they have some fascinating stuff that you just don't know what's gonna. They did the thing with two heads a while back, which I was very excited about. Ray Milland and Rosie Grier.
Until you got to the wrecking cars scene that wouldn't end. It's like the last 45 minutes of the movie are these police cars out in the field.
Is.
And yeah.
Loses some of its luster.
Scenario with
yeah.
It,
yeah.
Except not even like really stunts. It just, yeah, it was just padding.
And there's a guy riding on another guy because there's I was like, yeah, it's bad. So 7 o'clock on Monday the 26th, The Other Side of Hope. Thursday, March 1st at 7 o'clock is a part of the Wide Wide West series from 1954, River of No Return.
Marilyn Monroe.
Yep. Yep. Friday, March 2nd, the shorts program, Latinx Love Across Time and Space, Dolores at 6:30 p.m., Signature Move at 9:30 p.m. Saturday, March 3rd, Hostile Border at 3 p.m., oh, here's a date movie. Beatrice at Dinner at 6:30 p.m. Oh. Actually, now after seeing that, I think Salma Hayek and John Lithgow should be in a production of Love Letters. And then
I would buy a ticket.
You would
for that.
Buy that,
yeah,
right?
I absolutely
exactly.
Would, yeah.
So, and then Elliot Loves at 9:30 p.m. All of that is happening over at IU Cinema, over at the Historic Art Craft Theater. Friday and Saturday, March 2nd and 3rd is the Heartland International Film Festival Best of the Fest. So actually, according to this, Friday at 7:30 p.m., Saturday at 2:30, 5, and 7:30 p.m., Monday, or I'm sorry, March 9th and 10th, Friday and Saturday, both times 2 and 7:30 p.m., Pretty in Pink.
Never liked that movie.
Yeah.
I was the target audience.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I had loved 16 Candles and Breakfast Club, and then a friend and I went to see Pretty in Pink, and we both really
She really didn't need
really
any of those
like
guys.
Yeah, everybody was a jerk. And
I'm sorry, but her dress was ugly.
It was horrible. Okay, I'm a costumer, and that dress just drives me absolutely bonkers. It was
and I think Hughes is overrated. So I'll take Lady Bird and Edge of 17. And then Friday and Saturday, March 16th and 17th, 2 and 7:30 p.m. Here's another road trip: Anatomy of a Murder.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's favorite Northern Michigan courtroom drama, Jimmy Stewart, Lee Remick, Ben Gazzara, Arthur O'Connell, Eve Arden, your doppelganger, and Catherine Grant, and one of my all-time favorite music cameos by Duke Ellington. There, you know, in the 40s, you would have a band which band was in Pride of the Yankees, but there was often the times it was Cab Calloway or Benny Goodman, and a film would come to a screeching halt so you could have a musical number.
I'm all for that.
Yeah, well, and in this, what happens in this one, Otto Preminger, fun director Otto Preminger.
also Mr. Freeze on Batman.
Yes, Eli Wallach is now mad. But anyway, but the camera's going across this Northern Michigan juke joint. Love that specific. Mm-hmm. And then the camera goes through the dancers, and then sitting at a piano, playing piano side by side, Jimmy Stewart and Duke Ellington.
So sweet.
What a great cameo. Like, I think that's where Duke got his SAG card. I don't know if it is. But
that's the world I want to live in.
That's yeah, right? That's actually pretty good, and a lot of fish. Jimmy catches a lot of fish in that. So, all right. So all of that is happening. We're checking out. Now, there's a few video titles, and then we'll get to the Carol Burnett stuff. I know you're bristling with anticipation.
Time is money.
Oh, time is money. we're halfway there. So, so I've been trying to catch up.
Living on a Prayer. Sorry. I just had to say it.
That's true. That's Jersey Rock. Okay. Yeah, we do that around here. It's just quotes, sarcasm, and movie quotes and song lyrics.
That's why I love you guys.
Yes. So I've been trying to catch up on films that have been sent to me because of the end of the year stuff. And as a part of MVD and their Rewind collection, I now have it on Blu-ray and I really appreciate it. The punk documentary DOA.
Oh, that's a good one.
You've seen this?
Yeah.
I've never seen this before, and partially because I asked for it. But yeah, it's a look at the punk scene in the late 70s, and a lot of stuff I've heard about but never seen. And there's performances by, let's see, the Sex Pistols, Dead Boys, Generation X, yes, the one with Billy Idol, Sham 69, Rich Kids. But there's great footage of the Sex Pistols performing, including their last concert, as well as the famous one at the Country Bar in San Antonio.
Oh, my. Yeah.
Yeah, that actually happened. There is interview footage of Sid and Nancy, gang.
What about
Chloe and Gary got it.
Yep, nailed it.
Absolutely nailed it. But a really kind of cool look at that punk scene and some of the counterculture and how folks were just weren't ready for it. But some were, and we made fun of them in school. Way to go.
I married a punk rock dude.
So, yeah, you're in. You're a Dead Milkmen song. No. But also,
I do too, by the way.
Oh, excellent. Enough.
He looks like a hippie, but
there you
he
go.
Has like 20 Cabaret Voltaire CDs.
Mine was a roadie for a punk band.
Nice. Also with this is a longer than the actual feature film itself, a 2-hour behind the scenes about the making of the film, the problems they had getting the film done, finance, shot, lawyers. Anyway, this you can spend half a day with this. So that is out there. Also is a film called My Art. This is from the Film Movement Group. Now there's cameos by Parker Posey, Lena Dunham, and Blair Brown, but it's and they also want to do love letters, but it's an artist who gets to house sit out in the country in upstate New York and work on her project, which is to recreate old movie scenes. So the end of Some Like It Hot, the car scene in The Misfits, even the opening scene in the milk bar in A Clockwork Orange. So it is that kind of going to the country and trying to create with the, and it's not quite the quaint little cinematic town like a Local Hero or Englishman That Went Up a Hill.
Right.
But it's more about her process of trying to get this project made and dealing with a couple of locals who want to be actors and they kind of help out. And it's not quite Local Hero and it's not quite Under the Tuscan Sun. It's kind of somewhere in between. So it's
Under the Local Hero.
Very good. I like that.
Thank you.
That is out there. Also by Film Movement, a film called Apprentice. And it's the story of a young guy working at a correctional facility, a prison. And he becomes an apprentice for a gentleman who is the official hangman of the prison. And we find out as within maybe the first half hour or so of the film is that this gentleman who is under the apprenticeship of the hangman, his father was hung by this same guy. And then it's the tense next 60 minutes of what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. Very well done. And if that wasn't enough, the documentary Line 41, where a Holocaust survivor returns to Lodz and looks at the, yeah. So, and this was
that
one.
That sounds fun.
This, wow. Well, it's just when you think you've seen all of the stories about the Holocaust, there is about this particular ghetto and the train that rode through it and was able to just literally go through the ghetto and because people lived on one end or the other and the regular folk had to go to work. So this guy coming out and actually seeing some people that and where he grew up, where he wound up having to live, and even a relative of somebody who worked in the ghetto. So those are out there. Okay, let's shift gears, shall we?
Yeah, now, Carol Burnett.
Yes.
Bringing the room.
You
down.
Know what? Carol Burnett never did the sorrow and the pity on the show. That's okay. Or the Diary of Anne Frank. Quit reading my diary. Okay, one of the collections I got back in November, December was the 50th anniversary of the Carol Burnett Show. It's a six disc set, and they're the episodes in their entirety. So Time Life Books was able to kind of clean it up, and then it's not a greatest hits package. I should mention that because Gone with the Wind's not in here, and there's a few other obvious ones like the dentist one is in there, but the old man, the Tim Conway old man's not in this one. But it's interesting that they cherry picked a lot from like the first three seasons, especially the first year, which I haven't been aired for a long time. We'll get to your memories about the Carol Burnett Show, ladies, but I always remember in my head the dark background. Mm-hmm. When she goes on stage with the great kind of glass thing.
Right.
And that's only like, I think, the last couple of years of the show. It felt longer. And you also forget how long Lyle Wagner was involved and how short Tim Conway was involved. But I know he was a guest quite often. But it was a way of revisiting and kind of reprogramming how one feels about the show. And at the before I got this collection, we did buy the Lost Episodes, thanks Time Life Books, at 3 a.m. And anyway, kind of went through all those. So I guess, ladies, I'm going to ask you, besides Gone with the Wind, because that's everybody's favorite, and it's just one of the funniest things that's ever been put on television, period, what film parody of Carol Burnett immediately comes to mind?
Mildred Pierce.
Oh, for me, it's the Nora Desmond stuff. Because Sunset Boulevard
That was a recurring.
Yeah, Sunset Boulevard's my favorite movie. And again, Bob Mackie gets the punchline in that one. I loved her depiction. And I think a lot of people who maybe haven't seen the actual Sunset Boulevard are just familiar
with that look.
And so the more dramatic Nora Desmond.
I remember seeing that at work with you sometimes.
That's possible, yes.
Erica, how about Mildred? Mm.
Well, I mean, Mildred Pierce is just spot on to the movie. I mean, it latches on to every kind of absurd thing that happens in there. And, I mean, Carol Burnett does a pretty creditable Joan Crawford.
It's like a soul impression, you know?
Yeah, it is.
Really, she gets the...
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, the Mackie costumes are always amazing, in all of the film parodies.
Yeah, they are. I always remember the striped suit with the giant shoulder pads.
Right, right.
And then her daughter having the exact same outfit. Yeah. One that I always remember, and it's not in either collection, but the Petrified Forest.
Oh, I'm not sure if I've even
seen
that one.
It is. It's she's, of course, Betty Davis.
Harvey Korman is
Leslie Howard.
Of course.
Steve Lawrence, of course, is Bogart. And I can't remember who the sidekick, the minion is, but in this, it's Paul Sand, who's acting like a rabid dog. So
interesting. I'm going to have to look on YouTube for that one. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember the Double Calamity, the Double Indemnity?
Yes.
With the anklet?
Yep.
Yes.
So
the
terrific.
Jangled.
Yes. Yes.
It's funny you mentioned Sunset Boulevard. So Emma has seen Sunset Boulevard. I need to get more noir into my daughter's diet. But on Saturdays, when I would have to bring her to work, because my shift started at 5, we would watch a classic movie. That's kind of the rule, pop culture, Atticus Finch. And it wasn't Carol Burnett, actually, that turned Emma on to Sunset Boulevard. It was actually Kristen Wiig. If you go on YouTube or go to SNL, the Bill Hader, Vincent Price specials.
I'm a pirate.
Yes. So Bill Hader does Vincent Price, and I think it's two Christmas episodes, a Thanksgiving special, and a Halloween special. Mm-hmm. This is the Halloween one. And he's, of course, setting it up. Like, some of his famous friends are going to show up, and then the doorbell rings, and it's supposed to be, he goes, I hope a pirate or a spaceman don't come in. And you open it, and it's John Hamm as James Mason.
And spot on James Mason.
Yeah, actually
too.
Very good James. Yeah. And apparently he really wanted to do Dean Martin, but they wound up changing it to James Mason. And Gloria Swanson, played by Kristen Wiig, who just says, "Arg, I'm a pirate. I don't need a costume. I'm an actor. So, and she, because of that, she goes, Dad, I want to see this.
Yeah.
We will. So for a long time, my daughter would cross her hands and just enter a scene.
That's fantastic.
So,
again, good parenting.
Very good parenting. Yes. So, anyway, check out Petrified Forest. The other one I always remember was The Roaring Twenties with Steve Lawrence as Jimmy Cagney.
And the biggest suit ever.
The biggest suit ever. But I always remembered from the film, he gets shot on a stairs, on a steps of a building. And, of course, if I remember Steve Lawrence right, he kind of goes up and down the stairs like 4 times before he dies. So are there other ones that you can think of? Did watching the parody make you go watch the original?
Well, there wasn't a direct connection for me. When I saw the Carol Burnett show in the late 70s and throughout the 80s when they were just showing the, rerun packages, the half hour.
Right.
I would see these parodies, and I knew that they were based on real movies, but at that time, I couldn't just go on YouTube. I couldn't.
Yeah, you darn kids.
Get on Netflix.
No Turner
Classic.
Yeah,
exactly. So, I sitting around and waiting. So, for a lot of them, there were years that went by before I got the chance to see the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I just find it kind of interesting that, for the previous generation or two, these people saw the movie, and then they saw the parody. I had the exact opposite. I don't think I ever saw any of the movies that they parodied on Carol Burnett until years after I had seen the parody. So It's just a different relationship right. with the movie because you're watching it and going, oh, yeah, I remember that from Carol Burnett.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Warner Brothers cartoons had a similar effect, I think.
Yeah,
that's true.
Absolutely. And Mad Magazine, that was the
other one. Like, sure.
Again, the vast majority of movies, I would see them after I read the Mad Magazine version.
Now, I had a classic film-loving family, so I had actually seen Sunset Boulevard as a tot.
That's fabulous. Yeah,
that's also really good parenting.
And you know, I think we can see the through line from that.
Yeah, she has
now.
William Holden floating in water in her backyard.
I did take off a turban that I was wearing today because I thought, too much, daytime, too much. So I had seen Sunset Boulevard, and I knew that one. I had seen Gone with the Wind, so I understood Went with the Wind. But the one that I realized in rewatching some for this was Double Calamity for Double Indemnity.
Right.
I had not seen that, and had forgotten about the parody, and have just recently rewatched Double Indemnity again because you can't see it enough times.
Yes,
and they really spot on with Barbara Stanwyck's bangs and that hilarious, yes. hilarious anklet that just makes a crazy amount of noise. So that was another one that I really liked. Wasn't there a Little Foxes?
There is actually. There's a.
It's vague. It's hazy. For
I got.
Me.
I got Wikipedia pulled up on this, but going through the collection that they had, like they had Mrs. Magnificent with Sid Caesar. There was one, and there were other ones that they weren't really film parodies, but it was things like, you know, Carol Burnett dresses Carmen Miranda,
right.
you know, just giant fruit on her head. There was a 42nd Street one. It was sort of the backstage musical, but it's Bernadette Peters goes in for Vicki Lawrence. She can't perform because she's 9 months pregnant. I can't dance. You're 9 months pregnant.
There's a Showboat one, too. I think
so. There was Lovely Story, which I had never seen, of Harvey Korman with a bad Ryan O'Neill wig.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, they actually did this. So, and it was fairly recent, too. So yeah. I think it was right after it came out.
Well, there was a Jaws parody that was also
That's true. That's also on this list. Flora, I always remembered from Laura. So a lot of shotguns and clocks. That's not good. Waterloo Bridge. The African Queen, Carol does Kate, and Steve Lawrence does Bogart, and it's all about throwing stuff off the side of the boat.
Just like the movie.
Just like the movie. Postman Always Rings Twice.
Oh.
And one I had never seen before, and I know he hosted, but Burt Reynolds as the Lavender Pimpernel.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
He, okay. Well, first off.
Can we just stop this and pull that up, please, and watch it?
We just need to watch that right,
well,
right now.
He. And I forgot he hosted. He did a – like, he showed up once for a Q&A. I always remembered that. But he sings As Time Goes By with a bunch of models, but he keeps knocking over the piano and crashing on tables.
Oh, that Bert.
Oh, that Bert, yeah. Well, hey, at least it wasn't pushing the first wife. But anyway, then as a Lavender Pimpernel, he's jumping through windows and doing the wig thing. And I think one time I accidentally said Scarlet instead of Lavender. I'm like, oh, it doesn't matter if it's a rehearsal or a run. They just take the best looking one. But, yeah, that's out there as well. And apparently after this, she went down to his dinner theater, and this is what I would like to see footage of. They did Same Time Next Year together. Right. I would love to see
Mouth
that.
Mouth agape. Wow.
Yeah. So I always remember when HBO filmed plays in the early 80s. Yeah. And I'm like, that should have been one of those. Because of HBO, I got to see Plaza Suite, Bus Stop, Barefoot in the Park.
Did they ever
separate
make any
tables.
Of those available?
If you go on YouTube, which I don't recommend. You're on your own. You're grown people. But yeah, those are kind of out there because I did Barefoot in the Park at Richmond Civic, and I always remembered because it was my first impression. So it's Richard Thomas, Bess Armstrong, Barbara Barry is mom. If I remember right, Hans Conried is Victor Velasco, and I'm like, wait, who played my? I played the telephone repairman. I'm like, who played my part? And I went through it. It was James Cromwell.
Interesting.
And
there's
I'm like,
not
in
a
the,
huge amount of similarity.
In the early 80s, I was like, well, and I'm, I it's agree. Like yes. 1981. I'm like, okay, I would have probably thought it's Stretch Cunningham or the driver from Murder by Death. That's all we knew Cromwell from at that time. Anyway. So according to Wikipedia, some of the other parodies that they've been on the Carol Burnett Show, Airport, Babes in Arms, Beach Blanket Bingo, of course there was, Born to be Bad, Caged, I would like to see Caged, Dangerous When Wet, you've mentioned Double Indemnity, The Enchanted Cottage, From Here to Eternity, that's a lot of water, The Heiress, Jaws, as already mentioned, The Little Foxes, Backstreet, Little Miss Broadway, Love Story we've mentioned, Mildred Pierce we've mentioned, National Velvet, not International Velvet.
Oh, that's I don't remember that one.
I don't either, so we have to find
it. Yeah.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah, Tim Conway was the Mickey Rooney role.
Of course he
okay.
was.
Yeah.
Carol Burnett was Elizabeth Taylor.
One in a Million, Pillow Talk, Random Harvard.
That had to be Lyle Wagner
like, no,
in that one.
Or Rock Hudson, his co-host.
Oh, yeah, actually,
so,
yeah.
Rebecca, The Roaring Twenties, Rosemary. Yep. Rosemary, San Francisco, Showboat, Scarlet Pimpernel, So Proudly We Hail, Stolen Life, Sunset Boulevard, Torch Song, and When My Baby Smiles at Me.
So, the end.
The end. So anyway, that
so there were a few.
There were a few, and they worked. And of course, it also helps that you have Bob Mackie, you know, providing the great costumes for this. But it's fascinating that series and how influential it was for folks our age, as far as like you said, eventually seeking these films out. Like, oh yeah, I remember they made fun of it years and years ago. So.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, I would sometimes stumble on one of these movies and be like, oh, this is, you know, it's Norma Desmond.
I've seen this.
That's who Carol Burnett was doing all that time.
Like, it's that bald guy. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. So, Taffeta.
Yes.
I know we talked before. Have you had a chance to look at the Best Costume Design nominations?
I have.
And your thoughts on this. And Erica, you're more than happy to chime in on this,
okay.
of course.
See, here's the thing is I'm going to...
When you start a rant with here's the thing.
I know. Okay. So mostly this year, it's big historic dresses. And that is great. And that is beautiful to look at. And that shows skill. And I appreciate it. But I think it's largely really dull. So Beauty and the Beast. Yeah, it's gorgeous stuff. It's real pretty, but... Okay. Victoria and Abdul and Phantom Thread. Phantom Thread, I know, is costume porn. It is...
Paul Thomas Anderson wanted to call it that.
It's not that it's not beautiful. And it's not that it's not accurate, because I really respect the craftsmanship that they put into it. But...
It's that artists are just recreating art from decades ago.
Exactly. And even with something that's a fantasy like Beauty and the Beast, you're still riffing on it's a big pretty dress. It's a lot of big pretty dresses. And then you've got Darkest Hour, which is historically accurate. Okay, whatever.
Dark suits.
Dark suits. Dudes in dark suits. Okay, great. Yay. Shape of Water, a little more interesting. But ultimately, in that one, the most interesting thing is Fish Dude.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's film sociology guest Doug Jones. By the way, I'm going to replay my interview with him on next week's show for Oscar weekend.
Excellent.
Sorry.
Excellent. No.
Cross promotion. Back in.
That's great. But I just love them, respect them. I think clearly Phantom Thread will take it. And that's great. But it doesn't excite me in the same way that other things, like, for instance, in Black Panther.
Well, that was this year.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so that won't count for this. But like, that is an example of something. Ruthie Carter's designs for
great.
that are creative. They take from historic and they take from sci-fi. And she's created a world there. And that, to me, is a lot more interesting than big pretty dresses and dark suits.
Is there something from 2017 that you thought should have been a better nomination?
You know, I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Okay.
And truly, Phantom Thread, gloriously beautiful. And I will say just a little nugget for non-costumers and non-performers out there. The fact that he sewed messages and secrets into them is very true. Almost everybody I know who makes costumes does do that, or sneaks something into a performer's pocket as their little secret, that kind of thing. So I like that bit of our life kind of came to the fore there. But
don't butter your toast loudly. That's that's what else.
Right?
I got from
Taylor. Exactly. Big pretty dresses made by a difficult man. Okay. Sorry.
It helps that it's Daniel Day-Lewis. Well, that was another title that he wanted to call it.
Yeah.
I've heard costumers complain before about the fact that it seems like that's all that the Academy really recognizes are the historical costumes.
Exactly.
And they ignore everything else.
I agree. And it's just, it's not as interesting to me. I respect it. You know, it's like how I feel about the Beatles.
I get it. I respect it. I understand the place in
She's talking about the costumes
and all. But I'm not going to put them on and listen to them because I'm just not interested.
Well, I think it would be similar
People are
to,
going to kill me, but
you know, if there were a fine art award for you know, oil painters, for instance, and the awards that were always won by people who recreated a Van Gogh or recreated a Rembrandt, or
Absolutely.
It's like I'd like to see original work being
that is being exactly awarded.
I mean, like
right,
you mean
yeah.
when the Grammys award a performance of a song that was already recorded?
News.
Anyway. Yeah. Cool. All
Sorry
right.
about that.
No, absolutely.
I don't mean to be negative Nancy here.
No, that happens from time to time around here. Now, did you also make a list of the Bond girls?
Okay.
This was from last time you were on the show.
This is
frighteningly funny.
Okay, this shows my deep, deep nerdiness.
And we have 4 minutes, by the way.
Okay, no problem. I can do this. I choked last time because you asked me for, you know, top faves and top hated pieces from
Because you
Bond.
Brought it up. Yeah.
I brought it up. But I choked because I can't parse 25 years of films or 25 films in my head that quickly.
You can't.
I know. I'm such a jerk.
Crazy.
But I did do a bunch of rewatching, much to my husband's chagrin. And so it kind of breaks down into a couple of categories.
Okay.
Mostly talking about the ladies here because that's more interesting.
I'm a pig, yeah.
And because you like the ladies. There's the bonkers ones and the wearable ones. Wearable we'll go through real quick because that's
Bonkable.
Easier. The wearable ones are from 1977, Barbara Bach's blue, it's like a midnight blue with some rhinestone trim, very deep color.
Matt has seen it
in
his dream.
I'm not a fashion designer. I'm like, yeah, I know that one.
Yeah,
a
lot of décolletage. So that's really beautiful, timeless, terrific. I love the really sculptural suit from Spectre. It was 2015. It's the one that what's her name, Monica Bellucci wears. It's really severe, very Art Deco. I love that. And I am a big fan of Diana Rigg's wedding getup when she in I love that one. And it's trousers, which is scandalous for 1969.
Kate Hepburn doesn't know what you're talking
it's
about.
It's a trouser onesie with open work daisies and pearls. Are you kidding me?
She's a nut.
I love it. I love it. So those are kind of wearable and nice, timeless. But I like the bonkers stuff. Solitaire in Live and Let Die, she wears a lot of bonkers stuff. But at one point, she has something that's what I call a prop tomb because it's like a prop and a costume. And it's like a chair and a headpiece and a cape all in one when she's reading tarot. And I love that. Of course, anything that Grace Jones wears in View to a Kill because she's
or
Grace
Jones. Or
doesn't
wear in that one scene.
I love, love, love that. And actually, we just lost the designer last November.
Salute.
So salute. Zennia on a tops, leather hefty bag pants, and giant poofy pirate shirt in
no,
Goldeneye.
No disrespect to Honor Blackman, but I think that's my favorite Bond girl name. But
of course it is.
Yeah.
A lot of vagina. And Pussy Galore wore a purple paisley crushed velvet suit, right?
Yeah, well,
that's a good one, too.
That's the top.
Purple paisley crushed velvet suit when she was champagne leader to champagne one. And let's see. Those are the kooky ones that I really, really enjoy.
Okay, you got about less than 2 minutes. Is there one you despise? I know you do. I know you have one.
Oh, yes. There's one that I totally despise. Freaking cocktail dress in Skyfall that Severin is wearing. It is ill-fitting and there is too much going on. Like, there's 60,000 Swarovskis. Great. But that doesn't make it a good dress. It doesn't fit in the bust. It's got too much. It's backless. It's got the slit. It's got the tattoo thing. I can't stand it. Sorry. That poor woman.
I'm glad that we got this sorted.
Oh, and I do love the Tom Ford suits. You know, looks like a dream. It's not so much Daniel Craig's body that I like. I just like a really well-fitted suit.
Coming out of the water helps, though, at times.
I don't know. I prefer him in the suit, in the tux, than I do in the little baby shorts.
Okay.
Before we go, I just have to say this.
Please.
Taffeta, darling.
Yes. Taffeta, sweetheart. The nails. You understand.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think we've created an offshoot show right here. So.
Yeah, I like it.
Erica Taffeta, thank you so much for hanging out. We
thank
really appreciate
Matthew.
It.
Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Maybe some Oscar picks next week. Who knows? But you will hear my interview with Doug Jones because it's Oscar weekend. And by the way, the big guns, March 2nd, 3rd, 9th, and 10th at Scottish Rite Cathedral. 7:30 p.m. performances, 3 p.m. additional performance on the 10th. It's at Scottish Rite. There's plenty of seats. I'm directing it. Hope to see you there. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!